Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're speaking about a subject that I know will immediately grab your interest. The title of today's show is How to Stay Out of the Emergency Room. Everyone loves to have access to medical care when they need it, but it's sure a lot better to avoid those emergencies, sometimes even life-threatening emergencies. To help us in today's dialogue and give us some really practical answers is someone who knows the subject very well. He's an emergency room specialist. He is Dr. Roger Gallant. Dr. Gallant, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. DeRose. I appreciate the invitation. I'm very pleased to be here.
Roger, you've spent lots of time in emergency rooms. Tell us a little bit about your background.
I was born in Jamaica and then grew up half my life in Canada and have lived here in the United States for 30 plus years. But what I've found is that practicing emergency medicine is a very interesting life challenge because every day is different. You never know what will come in the door. We can go from having nobody in our emergency department to having a full department in a matter of, it seems like, minutes to hours.
Wow.
And so every day is different. You have to be prepared for everything and anything. And sometimes you actually have to think on your feet. You have to improvise to take good care of your patients.
So day in and day out, you've got people rolling into your emergency room, and some of them, you look at them and you say, this is really totally unnecessary. Am I putting words in your mouth?
You're not. You are certainly not. We see patients who come because they have no other option, mm-hmm. and that's unfortunate. But we also see patients who come because they have no common sense, practical way to deal with their issue.
Hmm.
And so I'm hoping we can share some common sense principles today that may have an impact on people's lives.
Well, that's really where we want to go, Dr. Gallant, because I know our listeners, as much as we all want to have optimal health, it's sure a lot better to be able to take care of yourself at home or avoid even a problem that you've got to take care of at home. So we're really speaking about preventive medicine in the fullest sense through the eyes of someone who deals with some of the most acute medical problems we see day in and day out.
Yes. What I've found is that one of the key principles that my grandfather actually used to teach me was he said, common sense is not very common.
Okay.
And when you think about that, it's very true. Especially speaking to the audience that you have, a Native American audience, they appreciate the wisdom of the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather used to say, experience teaches wisdom, but its fees are high.
Hmm.
So if you can learn from somebody else's experience, do so. So let's see if we can share some principles that will apply to that for today's program, shall we?
Yeah, this one is still sinking in. Experience teaches wisdom, but its fees are high. So if I get the experience of learning not to put my hand under a saw, the fee may be losing a few fingers.
That's correct.
But if I listen to the fellow that had that traumatic injury, maybe I'll be a little bit more careful around that bandsaw.
Absolutely. You've got it.
Okay, good. I'm putting it together. So if I can figure it out, I think everyone has got it then who's tuning in. So what are some of these common sense things that we need to really tune into that are so uncommon and that are ending up people in serious medical straits?
Well, let's start with what you've talked about. Let's start with trauma. A lot of times we have the misconception that nothing bad will happen to us, especially younger people. You know, teenagers have that optimism of youth that there's nothing that could go wrong. Bad things never happen. They happen to other people. It would never happen to me. That's a misconception. We really need to practice safety from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep. And I want to add just one more thing to that, that a lot of our actions and our destiny may be out of our control. So I think if we can ask for a higher power like God to have an impact on the things and the decisions we make as we go through our day, that puts us in better stead to avoid some of these mishaps that many people fall into.
So when we talk about accidents, I know in the public health community, we like to call them unintentional injuries rather than accidents, because there's often that preventive component. But by the same token, like you said, Dr. Gallant, many times it's not my behavior that's getting me into trouble, but it might be someone else's, the person who had too much to drink and then got behind the wheel of the car. So there's definitely room to recognize, yes, there's things I can do, but I need help from beyond me. And whether it's a creator that I'm praying to or looking to some other source of spiritual strength, that's an important part of the health equation, isn't it?
It absolutely is. You know, my wife says that I am too observant sometimes. But when I drive down the road, I'm not just looking at two cars in front of me or 25 feet in front of me. I'm trying to look 1,000 feet in front of me. I'm trying to look a mile ahead to anticipate things that could be happening. I'm trying to scan around me to pay attention to other vehicles that may be traveling in the same direction or even the opposite direction, and try to pay attention to what's happening. Give you a brief example. We were traveling down a four-lane road, two lanes in each direction, and we had a green light. And I noticed at an intersection that was maybe 500 feet ahead of us that people were starting, that a car was starting to pull out into the road as if they had a green light. Now, the distance, when they actually pulled out, the distance was much shorter than the 500 feet. So I had to make a quick decision on what to do. I was slowing down, trying to see what they were going to do. They ended up pulling up into the middle between those two lanes of traffic that were heading in my direction. And so, you know, I was essentially coming into their car before I knew it. Fortunately, by the grace of God, I was able to slow and maneuver enough to get around them without hitting them. But because I was paying attention, I had a chance to evaluate what the options were. If you're not paying attention to that, if you are checking to see what station your radio is on, if you are talking on your phone without using a hands-free device, if you are texting, you don't have those seconds of anticipation to be able to make a good decision about what the next move is.
Now, as an emergency room doctor, I'm sure many want to ask you this question, so I'm going to ask it on their behalf. You just mentioned these driver distractions. You're seeing people who've been involved in motor vehicle accidents all the time. Is this really a big factor, or is the industry just kind of trumping this up?
Well, let me tell you this, and I must say this as well. The emergency medicine literature does not like to use the term accident. I just heard you use accident, just like you said. The emergency medicine literature goes along with the premise that you gave out, that these are unintentional mishaps, accidental, you know, where people have made bad choices and there are results that go from that. Yes, we see people, especially younger drivers, who believe that their skills may be better than they actually are, believe that they can get away with it just this once. They've seen somebody else do it. And we see them have sometimes life-changing events that, you know, breaking bones, breaking backs, breaking necks, things that can change the way you live the rest of your life. And I encourage people to be ever so careful. A vehicle is a mass of steel and metal and different things, rubber and so on, that we sometimes take for granted how much mass there is involved, and the mass doesn't disobey the laws of physics.
So you've given us some pointers about helping to decrease our risk of these unintentional injuries, being mindful, getting the big picture, if you will, when we're driving.
Yes.
there's a lot of other accidents that happen. I know one of the big, and even whether we use the term accident like the average listener will, or unintentional injuries like our peers would say,
yes,
if we're well-schooled, we'd be using that terminology. But whatever we refer to them as, industry is a huge place where there's lots of trauma and lots of what we would call morbidity or harm to the quality of life. Do you see a lot of industrial accidents in the particular emergency room population you work with?
We do. We see them from time to time, and a lot of times it's operator error, as they like to say, carelessness. I'll give you an example. This was even before I became a physician. I was working in a hospital as an orderly, and my mother was a nurse, and one of her colleagues' sons got injured. He had a summer job as a student, a high school student, and was working in a foundry where they pressed metal and did different things. And one of these foundry presses became, it was stuck. Something was obstructing its operation. And carelessly, he reached his hand in there to try and pull a piece of metal out. And so this big press came down on his arm. And he had a very significant crush injury to his arm. Ended up coming to the hospital where I was working, and he had a vascular injury, meaning an injury to one of his blood vessels, and ended up having to be flown by helicopter to a specialist hospital where they could do some repair. He survived his injury, did not lose his arm, but had to go through significant rehabilitation in order to be able to obtain continued use, and he did not have 100% function from that arm after that. So, you know, just carelessly thinking, oh, I can reach in there and grab whatever this is and pull it out and things will work, that split-second decision created a change in his body that would be with him the rest of his life.
So these are huge issues, and they're often issues that affect people in the prime of life. They're working, they're active, and all of a sudden they lose capacity. I mean, whether it's full capacity or whether it's a portion, some type of injury. Any other type of high points as far as avoiding these things that sometimes rob us of life quality or even cost us our life?
Well, let me tell you this. One of the things that we do see is we see people who are operating, for example, machines or things like that while intoxicated.
Mm.
And intoxication does not only mean alcohol. Alcohol is maybe one of the more common intoxicants that we can think of. But you can be under the influence if you're using drugs, prescription drugs even, versus what we commonly call the drugs of abuse or street drugs. Those are things that impair our mind's ability to function properly. And people continue to use them because they stimulate the pleasure centers in our mind. And so it gives a feeling of happiness, a high, if you would, or a feeling of euphoria. But we need to pay attention that when you start to use substances that affect the way your mind functions, then it decreases your ability to make good judgments.
So basically the message you're giving us is even if a person feels like they're performing well or performing better, maybe they feel that the drug of abuse is making their mind sharper, really what the research literature and what your experience, Dr. Gallant, indicates is individuals who are engaging in these kind of substances, using them, and then on the job, they're actually subjecting themselves to a much higher risk of these unintentional injuries.
Absolutely, absolutely. The majority of, for example, motor vehicle collisions is what we call a car accident today. I would say that the majority of the ones where things have suddenly just gone completely wrong, for example, we see people who are involved in a single motor vehicle collision, meaning there was no other vehicle involved. They may have run off the road or something like that. In the majority of those, I would say that alcohol or some intoxicating substance was at hand.
A lot of practical information here being shared by Dr. Roger Gallant. We've got a lot more insights about a whole host of illnesses and conditions that end up leading often to emergency room visits that are totally avoidable. You don't want to miss more on today's edition of American Indian Living. Don't go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Wimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Wimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Wimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Wimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Here we are back with American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Dr. Roger Gallant, emergency room specialist, is with us today. He's helping you to keep out of the emergency room. Now, of course, Roger, we're not trying to keep people out of the emergency room if they really need to be there, are we?
No, absolutely not. If you feel that you have an emergency, please seek medical attention. The federal government has created laws to protect your ability to be able to seek medical attention if you have an emergency. Now, if after you've sought medical attention, they find you don't have an emergency, those laws suddenly disappear. But please, if you do have an emergency, seek medical help. Call 911 if you think you need that kind of emergent help, because it's important to take care of yourself and to make sure that your health is protected.
But the real goal on this show is to try to help people not require emergent help. You've been giving us some really very practical pointers about these unintentional injuries that sometimes lead to a person being a quadriplegic or losing a limb, losing an eye. You have some other amazing stories, though, about lack of that common sense that, as you pointed out, is not all that common, is it?
That's right. You know, I have some family members who love, when we get together for family occasions, to ask me, what are the interesting stories from the emergency department now? So just to share a brief one with you about the effects of lack of judgment because of intoxication. We were taking care of a man who was actually, I would say, in his mid-40s. Mm-hmm. So, if I may say this, old enough to know better. And what happened was he was drinking alcohol with a man half his age. And, of course, when you start drinking enough, your judgment is impaired. And the decision was made between these two men to take hot sauce to see who was more of a man, if you would. And so they chose this hot sauce that I've actually had in the past, and it is very intense. It's made with some of the hottest peppers around, habanero-type peppers, and it's called Dave's Insanity Sauce. Nothing against the host of this radio show.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that, Roger.
But even the name tells you that you almost have to be a little bit insane to use it.
Okay.
And a drop of this sauce will heat up a whole plate of food.
Hmm.
These two gentlemen had a wager, a friendly wager between themselves, to try and drink a tablespoon of this hot sauce. Now, both of them took it, and they both came in with severe irritation of their mouth and their gastric mucosa. But the older gentleman in particular had some problems in the past
mm-hmm.
with gastroesophageal reflux.
And in plain language, that would be what?
That means where the contents of the stomach can start to reflux or go back up into your esophagus, which is your swallowing tube, which leads from the back of the throat into the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes heartburn, what people commonly call heartburn. It causes irritation. It can cause a lot of belching or passing gas. It can be quite uncomfortable at times. Well, this man came in severe pain.
Mm.
We treated him. He ended up actually getting a stomach doctor to look inside his stomach with a special camera, and they found that he had created an ulcer in his stomach from taking this insanity sauce.
Wow. So he had that whole emergency room visit, and he didn't even win the wager, or did he?
I don't think anybody won the wager at that point. The two men were so uncomfortable that I think they forgot about the wager. But, you know, again, this was an unavoidable visit, unavoidable medical bills, unavoidable medical procedures that if he would have made better choices wouldn't have needed to take place.
So it was only avoidable to the point of making the choice, but once they made that bad choice, everything else was unavoidable.
They went down a road that they couldn't turn back. That's
wow.
Right.
Well, so there's a lot of things we could do just by using our head, and like you said earlier, sometimes it takes supernatural insight to
yes.
keep us
yes.
on the straight and narrow, if you will. But practical pointers to keep us out of trouble. Now, a lot of people do end up in the emergency room with unintentional injuries or making foolish decisions, but a lot of people end up there with infectious diseases. They end up with complications from chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes. Are there things that you as an emergency room physician, when you see people with a chronic disease, you might say, well, they never needed to end up in this situation?
Let me tell you this. Again, I think it really boils down to the choices we make. For example, not even so much talking as a chronic disease here, but just talking about how we make choices. You said infectious disease. A lot of people come to the hospital with infectious disease. For example, we see during the wintertime, we'll see a lot of people with coughs, colds, upper respiratory infections.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those are often caused by viruses, which do not respond to antibiotics.
Okay.
And we have people who will come into the emergency department with maybe a low-grade fever, maybe not having a fever, but they have a cough, they have a sniffle, they just don't feel well. And the common impression today is that those people feel that they need to have an antibiotic. Not everybody who has a cough, cold, or upper respiratory infection needs to have an antibiotic. The best person to evaluate that and tell you whether they do or not is a healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm.
But a virus does not respond to antibiotics. A virus will respond sometimes to antivirals. Oftentimes it'll respond to simple natural remedies like drinking more water.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking water instead of flavored drinks or sweet drinks.
Okay.
Taking common sense approaches, like if you have a sniffle or a cough, not going out in public and rubbing your nose and then spreading it to other people.
Mm.
Those are things that we call fomites, where you can actually get little virus particles on your hands or you can cough them out into the air, and that can be spread to other people, thereby spreading infections.
Mm-hmm.
making sure that you protect yourself. When you go from a warm environment outside to a cold environment, I see a lot of people who don't dress appropriately for the weather. Mm-hmm. You know, some people may think it's fashionable, or I don't know if this word is still practical, but cool, to be outside and not be appropriately dressed for the weather. It may actually be cool. It may cool your body off and lower your immunity, and thereby going to allow infection to set in inside your body.
One of the other things I know that people often ask, tobacco, something that's been used ceremonially throughout Indian country for centuries. Of course, historically, it wasn't smoked as an addictive compound every single day, and yet many people in Indian country and millions outside of Indian country are smokers still today, in spite of all that we know about the health hazards of habitual addictive smoking. A lot of health professionals are telling us that this is a significant risk factor for these very illnesses that you're talking about. Is this, again, just the medical community trying to get people worried about something that's enjoyable?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Tobacco is one of those things that it's very addictive. And the tobacco companies add chemicals to the tobacco to make people want to continue using it. But I can tell you, I take care of a lot of people who have emphysema or COPD, which stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And these people, their lungs were made to be like elastic. They can expand and contract. And these people, after exposing their lungs to the effects of smoke and tobacco, lose that elasticity in their lungs. So they have a lot of shortness of breath. As the disease progresses, many of them have to be on oxygen. They have a lot of coughing, inability to perform activities, including activities of daily living, like caring for yourself, dressing, walking. You know, these diseases can be quite, can have a large impact on your lifestyle. And I think from a health perspective, there's almost nothing more uncomfortable than to see somebody who cannot catch their breath. You know, we need to breathe every minute of every day. And if you can't feel like you're satisfying that need, that drive to be able to breathe, it has to be very uncomfortable. Again, we talked about young people not thinking it would happen to them. We think other people will, other people also think, oh, well, nothing will ever happen to me. But smoking predisposes your body to many illnesses, many diseases. And I see young people smoking. I see young people starting to smoke. One of the things that has always amazed me is healthcare workers who care for these patients who still go out and smoke.
Amazing.
But again, keep in mind that smoking is very difficult because the drug nicotine is very addictive. And it has an impact on our mind and all of our body. And nicotine is one of those things that we need to try and avoid if at all possible.
So it sounds like the message that Dr. Gallant is giving us is whether you're talking about total avoidance of tobacco or the movement that's going throughout Indian country of, quote, keeping tobacco sacred, just using it in ceremonies if you're going to use it. Don't get into this daily pattern of smoking. And if you are, get help because it increases your risk of a host of illnesses. A lot more to come, things that you can do to prevent that ER visit. Stay tuned.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host,
Dr. David DeRose, back with you, and across from me in our studios today, Dr. Roger Gallant, an emergency room physician. He's really motivated to help you stay out of his emergency room. Now, not likely that they'll end up in your ER unless they're in North Carolina.
That's right.
But regardless of where you live, many emergency room visits are preventable. Dr. Gallant is trying to give us some practical things that you can keep in mind that can save you not only medical bills, but can actually save your life. Dr. Gallant, one of those things that sometimes is life-threatening are those chronic diseases that many of us carry around with us, whether it's diabetes or high blood pressure or heart disease. Those diseases don't have to kill people, but they often end up with a scenario where people find themselves in the emergency room. Are those visits unavoidable if you've got these kind of diagnoses?
They may be. Again, it seems like the theme I'm really stressing today is the choices we make. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm finding is that people sometimes don't make good choices, and that affects those chronic diseases. Let me give you a couple of examples. First one is congestive heart failure, for mm-hmm. example, one of those chronic diseases where your heart is not pumping as well as it used to, and so fluid starts to build up. It can build up in your legs in the form of edema, can build up in your lungs in the form of pleural fluid or shortness of breath from fluid buildup there. And one of the things we find is that patients who have these chronic diseases may not want to do their usual routine. For example, a lot of people go to church on Sundays. And so on Sundays, these patients may take their regular medicines, mm-hmm. but not drink as much water, for example,
Okay. Because
they don't want to be having to go to the bathroom while they're out at church or mm-hmm. out for lunch or whatever may be their activities for the day. And so we find that when they don't drink their usual amount and they're taking their usual medicines, their body may actually get a little dehydrated, mm-hmm. the opposite of the congestive heart failure. And that can lead to other problems. It can lead to weakness. It can lead to fainting spells, what in the medical literature we call syncope. It can make them dehydrated so that their output of fluid is not good from their body and can lead to urinary tract infections and mm-hmm. different things. What we try to recommend is that people try to be as close to their schedule as possible. Try to do the things that are practical that would enable them to be able to enjoy their activities and not change things. The other example I wanted to give, let's talk about high blood pressure. When you have high blood pressure, your doctor or a nutritionist or somebody may give you a specific diet mm-hmm. to follow, which may have decreased salt and may make sure that you get adequate potassium, two of the things that help to control your body, control the electrolytes so that you're not increasing your blood pressure. What we find is that some people may go out with their family for a special meal and put aside sort of their health practices and principles and may eat a high salt diet, may drink a lot of liquid. Both of those things can increase your blood pressure. And before too long, they come down with some symptoms of elevated blood pressure, which, for example, may be a headache.
Okay.
And so we see that in the emergency department from time to time. So again, the stress image I want to leave with people is that we need to be careful about the choices we make and consider what the consequences are. One of the things I try to teach my children is that we all have choices to make, but our choices carry consequences with them.
I mean, it's a powerful principle, and I guess what I'm hearing you say really loud and clear, Dr. Gallant, is that when we're prescribed a medication especially, it's prescribed in the context of the lifestyle that we've been on, and often that lifestyle may be one where we get some counsel on how to improve it. And so if we're not following those healthy tips that our doctor or nutritionist has given us, if the medication is adjusted based on that lifestyle, and then I go off and have my big party or decide I'm not going to take my diuretic, my water pill, because I don't want to be getting up and down on the airplane flight or in church or when I'm shopping, then I'm potentially putting myself at risk for some complications that could end up putting me in the emergency room.
Absolutely, absolutely. Another one that goes along with that is when we aren't drinking and we get dehydrated, our immune system can't function well. And so, for example, being in an airplane where we don't want to get up and go to the bathroom, but we're in a confined space with a confined amount of air that is minimally filtered and so on, if there is illness or infection on that plane, we are predisposing ourselves to catching some of that because of the fact that our immune system is suppressed, so we're not able to fight off infection. We're in a concentrated environment with a lot of people, exposing ourselves to more bugs and different things. And so it makes it easier to come down with an illness or infection just from that brief airplane ride.
So one of the messages is try to maybe get an aisle seat and drink plenty of water. That'll also keep your blood from getting too, well, we would say hypercoagulable, but help your blood not to clot, right?
Right, not to be too thin, too thick, so that your cells can't function well. Your immune system has cells that go out and look for infection and foreign things to fight them off. Another thing that's important, especially with traveling, and this doesn't have to apply just to airplanes. It could be any type of travel. Travel in a car, travel in a bus, travel on a train. Another thing to pay attention to is getting adequate rest.
Okay.
A lot of times when we travel, we have to get up early maybe to catch a mode of transportation or stay up late because we get to our destination at an odd time. And when we affect our sleep-wake cycles, that also impacts our immunity. That also impacts our ability to fight off infection. And so it's important that as soon as you can, you get back to a regular schedule and you get back on your system of sleep and wake so that your body will help to fight. But if we're exposed to those long hours, taking in extra fluid actually helps our immune system to combat the deficiency we've put it at by missing out on sleep.
So there's a lot of simple things that we can do that can make a profound difference even in preventing serious emergency room visits, aren't there?
There are. Let me give you another one related to travel. When we travel, especially older patients or people who may be prone to blood clots, if we sit for long periods and don't get any exercise, we don't get a chance to walk, that may actually be something that makes it easier for us to develop a blood clot.
Okay.
So if you're traveling, let's say you're traveling by car, it's a great idea to stop every 2-3 hours and just walk for 5-10 minutes mm-hmm. to keep the muscles going, keep the blood pumping, making sure that blood isn't sitting and so on, because that's a very helpful thing to prevent blood clots.
Now, I've heard some people go so far as to say it's probably as soon as 60 to 90 minutes where, you know, the blood gets more likely to clot. Is that an over-exaggeration, or are you just trying to kind of meet people where they're at and at least get them to do something?
I'm trying to meet people where they're at. If you could do it every 60 to 90 minutes, I think that would even be better. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not feasible,
right?
You know, depending on our situation. But the more that you can practice simple things like that, the better impact it'll have on your life.
What about diabetes? I mean, this is a huge problem throughout the country. Native Americans, high rates of diabetes, but it's true of every segment of the population. It's an epidemic throughout the world. And is there something people can do to keep away from those emergency visits that seem to go along with diabetes?
What I would say is this. Exercise is so crucial for diabetes. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding is the best form of exercise is walking. Walking at a moderate pace, which means that you don't get out of breath, you're able to keep up a conversation, mm-hmm. actually burns 50% fat and 50% glucose. And that's important because what they're finding is when you're a diabetic, our bodies don't process sugar as well as it should. But they're finding that the underlying cause related to diabetes is a lot of times fat. Mm-hmm. Fat in the diet and fat on the body. So exercise is helpful, especially walking, is helpful because it helps to reduce the amount of fat on our bodies. And after we exercise, our cells have more insulin receptors. So the insulin that we do have tends to work better. And all of those things are good for diabetes. So we just need to pay attention to the simple things, and we can have improvements in our diabetes.
Over the years, one of the things that's caught up with a lot of my patients with diabetes, or patients that I've seen after they've had complications that ended them up in the emergency room, are things that have to do with their impaired sensation. Very common for people with diabetes to develop neuropathy,
yes.
problems sensing things in their feet. I know you know that. And I can just imagine you probably see many visits because of people who have impaired sensation in their feet and problems down there. Is that a safe assumption?
That is true. We see people who, because of their impaired sensation, they will bump a toe or cut a toe or get an infection. And if those infections aren't treated aggressively and early, a lot of times it can lead to gangrene. Mm. The reason being is that diabetics tend to have decreased blood flow to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then they have increased blood sugar, meaning that there's more sugar in their tissues. So they it creates a wonderful medium for bugs to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And gangrene is caused by a bacteria, and it starts to destroy tissue. And that's why so many diabetics end up losing limbs or toes or, you know, portions of limbs, because they're not paying as close attention to these things as they should.
Now, I know one thing that in internal medicine we're taught to teach our patients with diabetes is tell them someone's got to check your feet on a daily basis, whether you can do it yourself, if physically you can't have someone look at them. Are there other practical pointers that can help someone with diabetes not lose a limb and end up with those life-threatening situations?
If you're not able to look at your feet yourself, but if you are able to use someone else, if something is found, for example, if you mm-hmm. find there's an injury, seek medical attention early rather than late.
Okay.
You know, I see people with advanced stages of illness, whether it's a diabetic foot ulcer or somebody with a tumor on the side of their face or something mm-hmm. like that, and they're so advanced. And I often will question and say, you know, why did you wait so long to come and seek help? And often the answer that I get is, I thought it would get better.
Mm. danger of making assumptions and some practical insights from an emergency room physician. Dr. Roger Gallant is not going away. Don't you do that either, because some more very practical lessons from the emergency room, things that can make a difference for you and your family. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got more to come. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Weimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Weimar is home to the Residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Weimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Weimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Canned vegetables. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on. Help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want it.
Sorry. Duncan.
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Hey, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
We're back with more practical health tips on today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. With me, Dr. Roger Gallant, emergency room specialist. Roger, we were speaking in the last segment about diabetes, and we could have spent a whole show on that.
Absolutely.
But keeping people out of the emergency room with foot ulcers and the risk of amputation is a huge issue. Any other final notes that can really save someone a limb or a life?
Sure. Again, please just be careful. Make sure that you are careful where you walk. Make sure you wear appropriate shoes. Shoes that are loose-fitting, that do not put pressure on your foot anywhere, and also that will protect your feet if you were to bump your toe against something. And in line with that, also go ahead and make sure that your clothing is appropriate, appropriate for the temperature, whether it's inside or out, and that it's not too constrictive. Tight-fitting clothing can impact your circulation and can make your diabetes worse, increasing your risk of ulcers.
Very good points. I know a lot of our listeners, Dr. Gallant, get very concerned about their children and the health of their children. I mean, it's understandable. Many emergency room visits are occasioned because of parents having fears about their kids. We would never discourage someone from going to get medical help if they've got concern about the health of their child. But in your experience, are some of those visits unnecessary?
Well, let me share this with you. Not every earache needs antibiotics.
Okay.
Please be aware of that. You know, a lot of parents expect, because their two older children always got antibiotics every time they went to the doctor, that their next child will need the same. That's not always true. The other thing I wanted to share with you is that just because a child has a fever does not mean that they have to rush to the hospital. Yes, fevers can be dangerous. Yes, fevers can cause other symptoms like something we call a febrile seizure, which is a seizure related to a fever, but is not necessarily a sign that that patient is developing epilepsy or will have a chronic seizure condition. But what I want to share with you is that there are simple ways to deal with fevers without having to rush to the hospital. I'm not discouraging people from seeking medical attention. I'm just sharing with you some practical ways that you can treat fevers without having to run to the hospital several times. I've seen patients who've been to the hospital 3-4 times within a week just simply because of their fevers.
So am I hearing you right, Dr. Gallant? If a just having a fever itself is not necessarily a medical emergency.
That's correct. Let me share this with you. A fever, a lot of times, will increase your body's ability to fight infection. It increases the activity of the immune system, which thereby helps to get your body in a fight mode to help combat infection. And like we said earlier, many infections that we see are related to viruses as opposed to related to bacteria, which need antibiotics.
Okay.
So, give you a brief example. We had a young patient who was about 2 or 3 years old who kept having fevers. Now, this patient had an ear infection and was being treated with appropriate antibiotics for his ear infection, but he continued to have fevers. And the mother was at her wit's end. She had been trying to use anti-fever medications and alternating them at the appropriate time intervals, and she just didn't know what else to do.
And how high was the child's temperature?
The child's temperature was between 102.5 and 103.5.
So pretty significant fever.
Significant fever. And it would come down for a brief moment after she gave medication and then go back up. Mm-hmm. I suggested to her, I said, let's try something different. Let's try doing something we call hydrotherapy.
Okay.
Hydrotherapy means using treatment with water.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found is that water can actually change the blood flow in your body. Hot water tends to bring blood flow to an area, and cold water tends to push it away. And so the idea behind what I was suggesting to her was that if we could boost her child's immunity by using hydrotherapy, it might help to get that last step to get over the problem they were having with the fevers. I told her to take her child home and do what's called a contrast shower.
Okay.
Where she would take the child and put him in hot water, as hot as he could stand it without burning his body.
Now this is a child with a fever though.
Child with the fever. And that hot water is going to bring blood flow. It's going to move the circulation, possibly out to the skin, possibly to the lungs, possibly to the throat, some areas that he'd complained he felt sick. And then they were going to do that for 2 to 3 minutes and then turn it to a cold temperature, more significantly cold than the hot. So you want to feel a contrast, a temperature change, and do that for 30 seconds. And I told her to do that routine of alternating back and forth 3 or 4 times. Now, in the emergency department, we typically don't get feedback of what we've done,
right,
unless the patient comes back and sees us. In this case, I happened to see the mother of this child a day or two later for a different concern, and she told me that what happened when they went home, it was three of them in the family, the father, the mother, and the child. They went home. They got into their swimsuits, and they all went in the shower together. They must have had a big shower. And the child loved it. He thought it was like being at the water park. And they alternated back and forth, and things started to get better. She said as soon as they got out of that contrast shower, his fever broke, and he had no more fevers up to the time I had seen them.
Wow, tremendous.
So doing simple things like that will help to boost your immunity. Let's say you're getting a sore throat. Let's say that you feel like something is happening, you're coming down with something. You can even do hot and cold right on your throat. You can use a cold compress. You can use a hot compress afterwards. You can do those kind of things.
So what is that, a compress?
Compress is, let's say you took a cloth and got it in hot water, mm-hmm. got it as hot as you could stand it, and you put it on your throat and left it there until it started to get cool. And then you switched over and wrung out a rag that had been in cold water and put it there. That's a way of getting contrast mm-hmm. of temperature to your throat. You could also do the same idea in a shower where you have water beating on it. The other thing that you can do is you can do a moist compress on there where you take a rag in cold water and wring it out, and then you put that around your neck and put some saran wrap or something around it to hold the moisture in, and then put a wool scarf or something else around it to keep it insulated. And you can actually sleep with that overnight. It will start cold, but your body will heat it and make it mm-hmm. warm. And that helps to combat a sore throat.
Very good.
Another idea to treat a sore throat is to do maybe use some charcoal if you have that. You can get charcoal commercially prepared in health food stores and in some pharmacies even.
So this is not the briquettes like
this is make. Not a Kingsford briquette. That's okay. Exactly right. We don't want you using those because many of those have been processed and have petroleum added to them, gasoline added mm-hmm. to them, so they'll light. So you definitely don't want to use anything like that. You want to use something that's commercially prepared where they've taken wood and burned it and got the ashes, which is a very fine powder. And it's actually a good absorbent. It'll absorb things in your body. We use it in the emergency department to treat people sometimes who've taken an overdose mm-hmm. because it'll absorb things in the gut and move them out. But you could use this if you had a sore throat. You could gargle with a little bit of the charcoal water. You put charcoal powder in water mm-hmm. and stir it up to dissolve it and gargle with that. And I would spit out the gargle water, but then I would actually drink a little bit of that charcoal water. It may taste a little bit gritty, but it doesn't really have a offensive taste, I don't think. And that sometimes will help to bind infection and bugs and move them through your system. You may notice your stool will have a dark color after that, but don't be alarmed. It's not anything dangerous. It's actually just the charcoal doing its thing. You can also drink charcoal water like that to treat diarrhea. I've done that personally myself. Mm-hmm. We ate somewhere, and I must have been exposed to some bug of some sort and started having some diarrhea. And I used charcoal, and it got me better very, very quickly.
Tremendous. It's hard to believe, Roger, but our time has basically all but slipped away from us. Any final parting thoughts about avoiding emergency room visits?
I just suggest to you that you be careful about your choices and that you try to think practically and use common sense. Those, I think, are the biggest things to protect not only yourself but also your family. Dr. DeRose, I thank you that you've had me here with you to share these few moments, and I hope they're helpful to your listeners.
Tremendous help, Dr. Gallant. All of you, I think, today have gotten some insights that can keep you and your loved ones out of the emergency room. Like we said a couple of times in the show, if you've got a question, sure, get immediate medical attention. But if you can take some of these practical things and put them into practice, you may save yourself a visit to the emergency room or even more. For all of us, I'm Dr. David DeRose.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.